welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson. The world is a messy place. And while the creation of nations may make it somewhat easier to address problems, those nations are often not neat or tidy places either. Countries, economies may tank, their democracies can falter, partisanship can drive the general public apart, and authoritarian leaders can rise. When these things happen, it becomes harder to maintain peace, to keep people safe, to trade products, and to continue mutually benefiting each other on a global scale. And that can often negatively impact people here in America, and even folks right here at home in Michigan. Think of global wars, terrorist acts, the COVID-19 pandemic, and even economic chaos, like what we've seen in places like Greece or the United States. There's another crisis that we're going to turn to later in the hour. Israel is dangerously close to losing its democracy as that country's prime minister has threatened to place political controls on the judiciary, a judiciary that's investigating him for criminal charges, to avoid being convicted of criminal charges and being thrown in prison. Israel's prime minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, recently delayed that decision, but that story still leaves us with a lot of questions. But before going there, we want to talk about NATO, the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, which was formed in 1949 by 12 countries, including the U.S., the U.K., Canada, and France. Today, the Intergovernmental Military Alliance consists of 30 countries, 28 from Europe and 2 from North America. And right now, we have U.S. Ambassador to NATO Julie Smith with us to talk about how NATO operates and what her role in NATO looks like and how NATO strategy has evolved over time. Ambassador Julie Smith, welcome to Detroit Today.
Well, thank you very much and good morning.
We're happy to have you back here. NATO, Brussels, far away from Michigan, but you are a Michigan native. You're back home. What brought you back here besides what brings everybody else back to Michigan?
Well, it's great to be back in Michigan. And as you noted, I grew up here in Farmington and I always look for opportunities to come back home. But I do spend most of my time now in Brussels, Belgium at NATO headquarters working with all those other 29 allies that you just mentioned. As you might imagine, we've been spending a lot of our time focused on Russia's war inside Ukraine. And we work day and night to maintain unity and a sense of common purpose to address that war. But I thought it would be helpful to come back home and hear from Americans here in Michigan about how they're thinking about Ukraine and Russia, what questions they might have about the NATO alliance. And so I'm spending a couple days here meeting with students and community leaders. I'm speaking at University of Michigan today. I met the governor yesterday. It's been just a wonderful collection of interactions and engagements and really worth my time. It's great to check in with Americans, particularly in my home state.
You know, I think that is a great thing that you bring up, because when I talk to people about NATO, one thing that I think happens for me in my conversations is we all might have differing ideas of what exactly NATO does, how it came about, what's its importance is. I mean, there was a stretch of time before 2014 where some people even wondered, why does NATO exist? So let's just start from the basics. As you see it, what is, and you mentioned it a little earlier, what's the purpose of NATO? How did it form? And what is it to do? What do you want people to know about what the organization does?
Well, so the alliance was created, as you noted, in the late 1940s after World War II. And I think the United States and Canada and its closest allies in Europe sat down and thought about how could we prevent war from breaking out a third time. And so the idea behind the NATO alliance was to have a group of countries come together and pledge collective defense. And that collective defense idea is enshrined in the treaty that all those 12 original founding nations signed. It's in Article 5. Some folks may have heard of Article 5. It's a simple clause. It basically goes like this: an attack on one is an attack on all. And over the years, NATO has focused on collective defense, but it has also expanded its membership. And you mentioned this morning that we're up to 30 members and we're soon to be 32 with Sweden and Finland joining. What NATO has done over many, many decades is keep the peace and work towards stability. It takes work. Allies have different perspectives. They have different histories. They sit in different corners of the world, different geography. But ultimately, we all come together around the table, and we work together to put NATO's collective weight behind collective action. And that might be our work that we did in the Balkans to bring the peace there. It might be a counter-piracy mission off the coast of Africa. Or now, it's our collective efforts to help Ukraine defend its territory against Russian aggression.
So Russian aggression was at the heart of why this was even formed in the first place. And one of the things that, as the war is raging right now in Ukraine, that Vladimir Putin brings up oftentimes is that NATO promised not to expand eastward after dealing with Germany, around 1990, or that's what people will say. And instead, they've continued to do it. Some people would say that's a pretext. He seems to say that that was what really drew his ire. What response do you have to people who say NATO has been expanding further east than it should, as you mentioned, Sweden and Finland looking for acceptance in the organization soon?
Well, the NATO alliance did not promise the former Soviet Union and later Russia that it would never entertain the prospect of enlargement. What we agreed to was that we would not be stationing NATO troops at the time in former Warsaw Pact countries. But we, the United States, and our friends and allies in NATO agreed that it is up to each individual nation to make its own sovereign decision about which organizations it would like to join. So it wasn't NATO imposing the idea of enlargement on Poland, for example. It was Poland knocking on the door of the alliance to say, look, we're no longer part of the Soviet Union. We have a sovereign right to choose our own alliances, and we choose NATO. We'd like to join the NATO alliance. And so many former members of the Warsaw Pact in Eastern Europe have joined the NATO alliance, and we are about, again, to add Sweden and Finland to the alliance as well. But fundamentally, Russia is now getting more NATO, not less, because of its war in Ukraine. Sweden and Finland decided to join. Because of its war in Ukraine, NATO has put more troops into Eastern Europe because we have to ensure that we're addressing their deterrence and defense needs. And because he went into Ukraine, we're reaching out to help Ukraine defend its territory right now. NATO does not have troops in Ukraine. NATO is not providing direct military assistance, but individual allies are providing humanitarian, economic, and security assistance to the Ukrainians. But I would also say that Putin has put forward another false pretext for this war. He has talked about the fact that the Ukrainian people and the Russian people are one. He has talked about the fact that Ukraine is part of Russia, which it is not. It's its own sovereign nation. And he has talked about his efforts to denazify Ukraine, which is preposterous, and just another excuse to invade. So we are trying to get him to end this war. He could withdraw his troops tomorrow. He's the one that started it. And we are surging practical support to the Ukrainians in the hope that they prevail on the battlefield.
Yeah, Russia did acknowledge Ukraine's borders in the Budapest Memorandum. We know, of course, also President Zelensky's Jewish heritage would seem to throw a monkey wrench in the idea of him being a Nazi. But all of those things still come to bear when you're making these arguments, as we're speaking with U.S. Ambassador to NATO, Julie Smith, who's a Michigan native. And I wanted to get into one of the things that you brought up about Sweden and Finland soon to join NATO. I know there were some hiccups there with Turkey and Hungary pushing back a little bit. In fact, I thought Hungary's still pushing back a bit against Sweden, although there has been a vote to allow Finland in, and it seems like that's going to happen with Turkey as well. But you seem fairly confident that Sweden's going to get in. So what has it taken to get those last two countries on board, as they are a member of NATO, and no one can join NATO unless all of the NATO members agree? What did it take to get their agreements, and why are you so confident that Sweden will eventually get in also?
Well, I will say, when first and foremost, a couple of thoughts on that. When Sweden and Finland walked through the front door of the alliance last year, the alliance moved out really at a rapid clip to try and start what we call the accession process and the ratification process, where each member of the alliance, all 30 nations, they have to ratify those two countries' accession into the alliance. And 28 countries moved out at a speed we've never seen before in terms of NATO enlargement. And so that was the good news. The more challenging news was that two countries raised their hands and said, we have some concerns. That's not uncommon at NATO. We have 75 years of experience of dealing with a hand going up and a country saying, hold up, we have some questions, we have some concerns, we'd like to talk about them, address them, work towards consensus. And we've done that. And I think Sweden and Finland have done a fine job of specifically addressing some of the concerns that Turkey had about their policies vis-a-vis terrorism. And I think Hungary is coming along as well. We just had news yesterday that Hungary went forward and ratified Finland. We believe Turkey will do the same in the next day or two. And then we've heard both from Hungary and Turkey that they have the intent to move forward with Sweden, hopefully by June. And so NATO has a big summit this summer in Lithuania, and the idea there is that hopefully we will be celebrating the addition of these two new member states. And so I am confident that we can get this done. Controversy, conflict, disagreements, that's nothing new to the NATO alliance. That's how we work each and every day. But we will get through it, and I'm confident that we will soon have two new members.
Very good. And we did mention you're back in Michigan. You've spoken to people on the ground. These are some of the questions I had, especially hearing from you and what you were talking about initially in our interview. But I want to know from you, when you were talking to people on the ground, getting an idea of maybe where some confusion is, questions people had, answers that they wanted, what were some of the things that you were hearing from folks here in Michigan? Maybe some things that were a little surprising to you that you think, I need to clear the air about that, about what NATO does, or answer some of these questions that people have.
Well, I'd say two things on that front. So first and foremost, I think Russia is out there each and every day trying to put forward the false narrative that NATO is a party to this conflict and directly engaged. And so I want to make it clear in my engagements here and anything else that I do in the United States or even in Europe for that matter, that NATO quite deliberately has left itself out of this war. Again, the NATO alliance does not have a presence in Ukraine. It is not providing direct lethal assistance to the Ukrainians. Individual countries like the United Kingdom, like Poland, like Canada, like the United States, Sweden, some of our NATO partners are all providing assistance, but NATO doesn't want to be a party to this conflict. So that's what I've had some interesting exchanges on with various folks here in Michigan. I think the other thing that comes up in engagements is, you know, questions about how long this is going to go on. It feels like the United States has done a lot, and we have. The United States has provided over $30 billion of security assistance to the Ukrainians. But what I'm trying to do here is to help people understand why that's so important. If we allow Russia to prevail, if we allow this bully to walk in and take control of a sovereign nation, it's not only horrific news for the people of Ukraine that exist in their own right and again live in a sovereign state, but it's bad news for the broader global order. Other countries, other autocrats, China, Iran, will look at what happens in Ukraine and take note. And if the West, if we in the United States, if Europeans, if all the other countries supporting Ukraine look away and we get distracted, then we may find that other countries are taking that as a sign that they can do the same. So it's important that we stand with Ukraine. We want to work towards peace. We want this war to end. We have to apply pressure on Moscow. We have to support the people of Ukraine. But ultimately, we believe they will prevail with the important support that we're providing. And lastly, I'll just say, it's not the United States that's just providing support. Over 50 countries around the world are providing security assistance, and many, many more are providing economic and humanitarian assistance as well.
You know, you mentioned there the need to show that people can't be bullies. One of the things that NATO is bringing up or allowing people to see so that hopefully it can be a stabilizing force throughout the world. But I think for a lot of people who have grown up, especially not living under the shadow of the Cold War or not being so familiar with the threat that seemed to exist out there, they seem NATO might be the destabilizing force because, hey, everything was peaceful until this whole thing happened in 2014, which, again, was not the cause of NATO. But again, Putin puts forward the idea that it was because of eastward expansion. You mentioned how it can be a stabilizing force. Do you have any historical examples of why NATO was needed in the first place and how NATO may have worked to thwart aggressive intentions in the past that people can see so as to why you feel like it could be a stabilizing force in the world?
Well, let's not forget that, again, NATO was created in the wake of World War II to ensure that war would not break out again. The United States had been pulled in twice in a quarter century to get involved. And so first and foremost, the purpose of the NATO alliance was to bring stability to Europe. And that's exactly what it achieved over many, many decades. Instead of watching another war break out, what NATO was able to do was to stabilize the situation and enable the countries that had been at war with great frequency in recent years switch to work collaboratively, build trust, build deeper economic and trade relationships, and work towards peace and stability. And then when the Soviet Union broke up, there was again the possibility of instability, and those countries came into Brussels, into the NATO headquarters, and said, we too want to join this alliance to work towards stability and security, and not just be security providers or consumers, but to provide security to the wider Euro-Atlantic area. So the success of the NATO alliance has been first and foremost in the security that it has brought to Europe writ large. And then beyond that, NATO found itself getting engaged in places like Iraq, where it still has a mission there. It is training Iraqi forces. NATO is still present in the Balkans. And again, individual allies are supporting Ukrainians' right to self-defense. So NATO is a stabilizing force, and it is a way for the United States to share the burden of global security with our closest allies. We don't want to have the burden rest solely with the United States. We want to work collectively with our allies because not only does that bring more capacity, but it brings more legitimacy and political heft to any conflict that's out there. So working together is the name of the game inside the NATO alliance, and I believe strongly that NATO is a net security provider to its immediate neighborhood.
You know, Ambassador Smith, I know that you got other things to do today. We're going to let you go fairly soon. But before I do have one call that I want to get on the air because I think it's an interesting question. Okay. Anthony in Southwest Detroit, go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
Well, thank you so much, Nick. Yeah, well, I mean, I just think it's a lot of, you know, fluff and propaganda spin from the ambassador. I mean, everyone knows the 2014 coup happened and our officials were significantly involved in that, namely Senator John McCain, Senator Chris Murphy, and Deputy Secretary of State Victoria Nuland. Everyone knows they were deeply involved in the overthrow of the Yanukovych government.
All right, Anthony, I don't know if everybody knows this, but go ahead with your question.
This isn't an act of journalism when you're totally
it's
backing
not an
up
act of
U.S.
journalism,
government officials.
Anthony, do you have a question
you're backing up a
or
U.S.
not?
Government officials narrative.
Anthony, if
that's
you don't have a question, I can let you go.
Yeah, well, I do have a question.
Go ahead.
How did NATO stabilize Libya? Can you tell me that, Ambassador? And Nick, were you so happy to be in Iraq 20 years later? You think that was the right decision?
I'm not the one being interviewed here, Anthony, but I appreciate your call. Go ahead, Ambassador Smith. Do you have an answer for Anthony's question?
So in the case of Libya, back in several years ago now, NATO did have a six-month air campaign there, and that was at the request of the United Nations. There were actually two UN Security Council resolutions for which Russia voted at the time. I think it was UN Security Council Resolution 1970 and 1973, and we were asked to go in and provide air support to the rebels at the time. And NATO conducted, again, a pretty short military mission there. It was about 6 months in length. That mission achieved its tactical objectives, but there is a wider set of questions associated with what came after that. I think when the international community came forward after that operation to ask the Libyans what additional support might be provided in the name of post-conflict reconstruction, the answer that came back from the folks in Libya was essentially, we've got this. And I think looking back, I think the international community, a variety of organizations, whether you're looking at the United Nations or some of the other organizations out there like the European Union, could have had a stronger effort to work with the Libyan government at the time to foster greater stability. All that said, I think NATO came in with a very clearly identified purpose and mission, and it achieved that mission, again, in a fairly short period of time.
Well, Ambassador Smith, like I said, I know you have other places to be on your tour of Michigan, but thank you for taking a moment to talk with us during the trip, and hopefully we can have you back soon.
Anytime. Thanks so much for your interest.
When we continue on Detroit Today, we're going to discuss foreign politics and shift to Israel, where the country's democracy has been hanging in the balance. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET.